Timberwolves' Jimmy Butler is still in limbo. Anthony Davis prepares for a future beyond the Pelicans. Habib versus McGregor. LeBron James and the Toronto Raptors. Chris Paul stands up for Carmelo. Saquon Barkley is in our photo of the week. All that and more on What's the 411 Sports coming right up. Welcome to this week's edition of What's the 411 Sports. I'm Keisha Wilson.
I'm Mike McDonald.
Good to see you, Mike.
You too, Keisha.
Thank you. And good to see all of you out there in TV viewer land and on our audio platforms. So we're just going to jump right in with this week's episode of the Jimmy Butler saga. As of this taping, the Miami Heat were in serious contention for Jimmy Butler's services. However, there was a wrinkle in the trade where Minnesota insisted that Gorgui Dieng's contract be part of the trade. Now, Mike, do you think that we will see a trade finalized for Jimmy Butler before the start of this year's NBA season?
Well, you know, Keisha, it seems like the word out today is that Jimmy Butler has actually given an ultimatum or a deadline to the Minnesota Timberwolves that Friday is the day that he would like to be traded. From my standpoint, I would make him stew. You know, I think that the Timberwolves certainly have the upper hand here. One of the reasons why I say that is because what Jimmy Butler has done by airing his grievances publicly the way that he has, it's hurt his stock, without question. I think the Timberwolves have to be very careful here about how they handle this. This is not something that they want to carry into the regular season. However, they're the ones with the upper hand, right? They're the ones that still have Jimmy Butler. Tom Thibodeau and Jimmy Butler still seem to have a mutual respect for one another. And despite all the differences that they have right now, there seems to be some level of common ground. I think in the end, most likely what will happen is there will be something worked out. I don't think that it will meet Jimmy Butler's deadline. But let's face it, you don't want to go into a regular season with this hanging over your head. It's not fair to the franchise. It's not fair to your roster. And most importantly, you know, I know that I've kind of thrown Jimmy Butler under the bus here a little bit, but it's also not fair to him. I get it. He's made some mistakes here the way that this has gone down, but this guy has been an NBA veteran. If he doesn't want to play somewhere, he has that right. Not happy with the way that he's handled it. I'd like to see the situation solved as soon as possible. In the end, Keisha, I don't think that they're going to meet Jimmy Butler's deadline, but I do think that they will get something worked out prior to the regular season, which is just around the corner.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to get a deal done before the NBA start of the NBA season. And Miami Heat, they were very, very close to signing a deal. And it's not the fact that they backed out of it. It's why they did. It's because of Minnesota's asking price. And I understand their position. They want to get the most that they can for Jimmy Butler. But at some point, they may have to come down on that asking price because Jimmy Butler is going to be a rental for the most part, unless they're able to work out a deal with Miami or a team that's on Jimmy Butler's desire wish list, where it's likely that he will sign an extension after this season, because who wants to give up the farm for somebody who in July can be like, oh, you know what, deuces, it was really nice knowing you. So that's where the sticking point is. And also, you know, maybe even though the directive has come from above that this deal needs to be done sooner or later, maybe this is Tibbs's way of kind of pushing back, because I don't think he wants to see Jimmy go. Jimmy is probably, I mean, he has a long-standing relationship with him, and Jimmy Butler may be the key to keeping his job, because I think Tibbs is on the hot seat. If the Minnesota Timberwolves underperform, then he could be out of a job, and Jimmy Butler was the reason that they made it ever so slightly into the playoffs last year. You know, he was hurt for a span of time, and the Minnesota Timberwolves were looking like they were going to be on the outside looking in. But it wasn't until Jimmy Butler came back into that lineup that they were able to get to the playoffs. So Jimmy Butler, it may be the key to keeping Tibbs' job. But, you know, he's kind of stuck in a hard place. When your boss tells you you need to get something done, you need to do it. So we're going to see how this saga ends.
Apparently things have gotten so bad that Pat Riley actually hung up the phone last week on Tom Thibodeau. So
you can't stronghold Pat. You can't stronghold Pat Riley. He is not about that life.
Well, Kyrie Irving is the man. First Jimmy Butler, and now it's Anthony Davis that says he would love to play with Kyrie Irving in Boston. Now, according to league sources, Davis will probably end up with the Boston Celtics or the LA Lakers. Now, let's dream for a little bit. Can you imagine a Boston team with Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, and Anthony Davis? If not Boston, where could you see Anthony Davis and his unibrow wind up?
Mike, this is going to be definitely a dream because I don't know what Boston would have to give up in order to have these three players on their roster. And then also, you know, what's tricky about them is their individual injury histories. Kyrie is very injury prone. Anthony Davis has gotten nicked up over the past few seasons, and Jimmy Butler has gotten nicked up. So if all three of these people are on the same roster and healthy, this is definitely a core for a formula team that's definitely going to make it out of the East. Plus, make it to the finals and probably win the chip. I can see this team beating a Warriors team, especially if this happens after the season when people on the Warriors like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are going to want to start cashing in on, you know, their big contracts. And I don't think the Warriors are going to want to pay the hefty luxury tax it would take for them to give everybody these big dollars. So it would be a really nice dream. And of course, at this point, Anthony Davis doesn't have control over where he's going to land up. So he may want to be in Boston, but he doesn't have free agency. He's not eligible for free agency for another couple of years. So it's going to be where the Pelicans are going to get the best deal if they want to trade him for something, as opposed to taking a chance on re-signing him or having him walk out for nothing. And so I will say, if not Boston, I know who's going to be making phone calls to the Pelicans, and that's going to be Magic Johnson and the LA Lakers. Could you imagine LeBron and Anthony Davis and that young core that they have together on one roster?
I mean, that's something that's a fantasy that LA Laker fans are certainly clicking to at the moment. And I like what you said about the Lakers there. I think you have LeBron James possibly leading, going in towards the end of his career, right? And then you have a guy like Anthony Davis, who we can argue is probably the fastest rising star in the NBA right now. He has been terrific since he's jumped onto the scene from Kentucky. The guy has been terrific. He's had a very good career. And the sky is the limit for what lies ahead. As far as how this all plays out, I mean, the stuff with him winding up in Boston down the road, for you and me as Knicks fans, that's really our biggest nightmare. And then at the same time, you know, for New Orleans, I think that they have an opportunity here. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to do this over the course of the next season and a half, as Anthony Davis's contract starts to expire. But can they rise above, become a little bit more competitive, maybe pick up some pieces and give him some options to say, hey, look, we really want to do everything that we can to keep you here in New Orleans? Most likely, that's not going to happen. I think that a guy like Anthony Davis, whose star is growing so fast, he's going to want to play in a major market. If I had to lean towards one or the other, be it Boston or the Lakers, I would have to go with the Lakers, not just because I'm so anti-Boston as a Knicks fan, but also because, let's face it, as an NBA fan, it would be kind of fun to see him team up with LeBron James.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a shame. I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite cities ever, but it's just a small market. And for Anthony Davis to really just catapult to superstardom, it's going to be in the bright lights of L.A. with a LeBron James and with the up-and-coming Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. I mean, the stage is perfect for him to join the Lakers. So we're going to see. So now we move from peacefully coexisting to the fight of the ages. So, billed as one of the most significant fights in UFC history, we had the matchup between Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. And Khabib won. Now, Mike, the talk of that fight was the after, you know, what happened after Khabib was declared the winner, and with the melee. So do you think that the organizers of the event had enough protection to handle the melee? And then what do you think are the next steps for the UFC?
You know, listening to Joe Rogan, I read an article where he was interviewed. And what Joe Rogan, who's heavily involved in the UFC, what he said was, I couldn't imagine how they could have possibly had any more security that could have prevented this. Well, what could they have done in the meantime to prevent some of this? Well, one of the things I think that's happened with Conor McGregor over the course of the fights that we've watched him go through over the course of the last couple of years, he gets nasty. He gets bigoted. He says a lot of things about people's families, about their religions, about their hometowns, about their wives, whatever. anything is up for grabs, and he'll say it. And I think that one of the things the UFC could have done and what they should do going forward is get rid of... Now, I get it. This is the most macho sport that you can imagine, where you have two men going into an octagon to go beat the living daylights out of one another. But that nasty stuff, I think they need to get rid of that, and they need to make an effort to do so, because let's face it, there's been so much of a lack of respect. Now, the final thing that I'll say about this, I didn't get to see the fight until the next day where I was able to watch it. I did see the post-fight stuff, though, on ESPN where Dana White was interviewed, and I was somewhat shocked at the way that he completely threw Khabib under the bus and then kind of saved McGregor. Let's face it, they both made mistakes here. Now, I get it. At the same time, Khabib, what he did was completely wrong. The kid was caught up in the moment. Whether or not there were these Muslim profanities that were yelled at him, that's something that we might not know. I think it was. I don't think that he would have responded like that the way that he did. But it just bothers me the way that people look at McGregor as if he was in the right here. This guy was at Barclays Center just recently where he threw something at that butt. You know, and there's always something with him. So I don't think that he gets off scot-free here. And Khabib, I mean, here's a kid who he comes out, he's shown remorse. He admitted he made a mistake, and he made a horrible mistake. Shouldn't have done what he did, but there's no doubt that the UFC needs to make some types of changes here so that something like this does not happen again.
Yeah, I agree that I don't think they could have predicted this would happen. You know, there was, you know, security measures in place. After the fight, they were able to get both McGregor and Nurmagomedov out of the ring with security, even outside of the arena with security. So I think they did what they thought, you know, they could. Nobody could have anticipated this. And, you know, Conor McGregor is an habitual line stepper, and he has been allowed to be a habitual line stepper. And freedom of speech is great, but it doesn't mean that there aren't consequences. We have the right to say whatever it is that we want, but that doesn't mean that it's without impunity. And Conor McGregor found that if you poke the bear, it's going to attack you. Now, all through the pre-fight conferences, post-press conferences and weigh-ins, like you said, Conor McGregor, he wanted to kick him during one. He threw something at him during another pre-match thing. He attacked his family members, his religion, his country, everything. And all the while, Khabib was calm, cool, and collected. And after the bell rang and Khabib looked at in the corner, I knew that he was focused on somebody. Somebody must have said something to him, and that's when it all started. Look, as they say in the streets, you know, you can get these hands. And Khabib let Conor McGregor know, you want to talk, you're going to get these hands. And not that I condone him jumping over and, you know, and everything that ensued, but I understand. But and like you said, I was really shocked when Dana White mentioned suspension for Khabib, possible suspension, a possible stripping of the title. For what? Conor McGregor threw a barricade at a bus, shattered the window, caused injury to innocent bystanders. And then I was reading there was a wife and a child on that bus, caused injury to the fighters that were scheduled to fight that matches that weekend. They couldn't fight, so that's money lost for them. Now, I don't know, in a case like that, does the UFC give them money because it was something that happened out of their control? So I don't know if they were compensated in any way, shape, or form. But you don't even know what long-term effects that had. There was glass in people's eye. And what happened? The UFC stood by and let the criminal courts handle it, but there was no suspension, no fines, nothing handed towards Conor McGregor by the UFC. And if there is some kind of retribution against Khabib, I'm going to be really perturbed. I'm going to be pissed off. And I think that everybody who has any sense of decency and doesn't have an ounce of ignorance, because I was reading some of their comments on Twitter after that fight, and the nasty hatred that was aimed towards Khabib was disturbing. So I think everybody who has a sense of decency and not an ignorant bone in their body would stand up. Because they're already talking rematch. Conor wants a rematch. I'm sure he does. But he's going to get them hands again. Well, don't go away, because when we come back, we'll have more of What's Poppin'. And now it's time for some quick bites. It seems as though LeBron James was very close to joining the Toronto Raptors. According to Joe Vardon of The Athletic, both sides were very interested in reaching an agreement, but we all know LeBron James took his talents to the Los Angeles Lakers. The family of NFL Hall of Famer Junior Seau settled their lawsuit against the NFL. Seau committed suicide after a long battle of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, abbreviated CTE, a degenerative brain disease that is linked to repeated hits to the head. And a big congratulations to New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees for becoming the NFL's all-time leading passer, leapfrogging over Peyton Manning. Welcome back to What's the 401 Sports. Former University of Louisville men's basketball head coach Rick Pitino has hit the media circuit promoting his new book titled Pitino, My Story. In it, he says he never wants to coach again. Mike, do you believe Pitino?
Well, I think Rick Pitino, whether or not he wants to coach again, he's probably not going to get the opportunity for a number of years. You know, it's going to take some time for the wounds to heal with everything that happened at Louisville. Maybe there's part of him that does still want to coach, but I don't know whether or not the guy would have the energy to go ahead out and do it. I mean, what is he, in his mid-60s now? He's going to take a big-time job at a big-time school. I just don't know if the guy has it in him that he would be able to go ahead and do so. You know, look at a guy like Jim Calhoun, who's taking a job at a small D2 school. You know, I could see something like that maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line. But most likely, Rick Pitino is not going to wind up getting a job within the next year or two because there's just been so much controversy that's surrounded him. You know, this is a guy that started with Kentucky, right? He built up the program. I mean, he had other coaching jobs before that, you know, at BU, and of course he was, you know, Jim Boeheim's assistant over at Syracuse back in the 70s. But Kentucky was like his first big thing after he was the coach of the Knicks. And he did a very good job there. But what's happened is just all this scandal that's surrounding his name now. I think possibly one of the reasons why he's saying he does not have the desire to coach is because he doesn't want to look like a fool when he doesn't get any head coaching opportunities.
Yeah, I think it's more the lack of opportunities for him, because I just find it hard to believe that if after Louisville did their initial investigation and said, you know what, Pitino, we're going to suspend you for X amount of games, that he would have said, you know what, I'm good. Thank you, I'm going to retire. Or if a big-time school like Duke called, you know, and said, hey, we want you to be our head coach, I don't think he's going to turn down that job. It's just that he doesn't have the opportunity to accept a job from a big-time program. And you did mention Jim Calhoun going to a smaller school, but I just feel as though Rick Pitino has such an ego that he wouldn't allow himself to take a job at a Division II school or a smaller Division I. I think he likes the big time. He liked the notoriety, the prestige that came from being a successful head coach at a top program. So, you know, and look, Pitino has a history of not telling us the truth. So who's to say that, you know, he wouldn't take a coaching job should he become desirable at any point in the future?
Absolutely. Well, Keisha, we move on to Houston Rockets guard Chris Paul, who has taken offense to the criticism of his fellow teammate Carmelo Anthony, calling the criticism of Melo disrespectful. Do you think Chris Paul is right that the media may have gone way too far with their assessment of Carmelo Anthony?
Absolutely. I am a fan of Carmelo Anthony, and I think he has just really gotten a bad rap. Because Carmelo is one of the most gifted scorers in NBA history. He has a career 24 point per game average. That means on any given night, he's giving you 24 points, at least 20 points. You can't tell me that he's washed up. And I just think that his stint with the Oklahoma City Thunder just really left a bad taste in people's mouth and just really made it easy to say, oh, he's washed up, instead of saying that maybe this wasn't the best fit for him. And I remember towards the end of Power, his wife, or ex, well, they're still technically married, Lala, went on her press tour, and she stopped at an ESPN show, and they were asking her about Carmelo and the Houston Rockets and what was wrong at in OKC, or what's going to make his stay at Houston different. And she said that, you know, for him, it just wasn't a good fit, and he didn't feel comfortable there. He didn't really know his role, and that just kind of played out on the court for him. But now he's in a new situation. He's got one of his best friends on the team with him. He's got James Harden, and everybody else has really embraced him. He's with a coach, while although they had a contentious history, he's familiar with Carmelo. And if one thing D'Antoni is, he is someone who is really gifted at offense. He cannot coach defense. That was never really his strong suit, but offensive, he has a really great offensive mind. And I think that he'll be able to successfully add Carmelo into the mix and possibly get them past the Warriors.
I think the answer to this question is we're going to find out, right? We're going to find out what's going to happen with, and I think I'm optimistic in this. At first I wasn't, but I've sort of grown and taken towards the other side as far as this decision for the Rockets to go sign, bring Carmelo Anthony on board. I think that it is going to wind up being a good decision. You know what? I think maybe it should have happened last season. He should have avoided going to OKC as opposed to, and instead gone with Houston. But then you can't go back in time and change that. And of course, it might not have worked out for the Knicks like that. I think for Carmelo Anthony, some of the criticism that he's faced has been warranted, all right? The fact that he doesn't play defense and that he doesn't necessarily make his teammates better. But as you pointed out, the guy is a prolific scorer, right? He's been a perennial all-star, not to mention he has won a championship, maybe not at the professional level, but he did carry Syracuse as a freshman to a title back in the early 2000s. So I think the media has been very harsh on Carmelo Anthony. Now, some of that maybe he has brought onto himself with some of his comments, maybe some of the way that he's treated his social media with some of the stuff that he's posted. But at the same time, this guy is still a future Hall of Famer. And what he can do here in Houston to help try to get them to a title, which they are contenders, it's going to be very tough for them to beat Golden State. But we're going to find out just how he will fit in to this Houston Rocket offense. Our photo of the week is a picture of Saquon Barkley scoring a touchdown during the New York Giants game against the New Orleans Saints at MetLife Stadium.
Welcome back to What's the 401 Sports. We're in a New York state of mind with our New York sports report. Now, Mike, the NBA season, regular season, is upon us. So why don't we just take a quick look at the preseason for both the Nets and the Knicks and give our impressions.
Sure. I think the Knicks are certainly, we'll start with the Knicks. They have their work cut out for them, right? Because Porzingis is not going to be healthy. And that's really going to hurt them. And I think one of the things that Knicks fans are going to start to see as they get 15 to 20 games into the season and they're going to struggle, you're going to hear the word tank. Absolutely, you're going to hear it a lot because that's what the Knicks fans are going to be leading towards. I think from what the Knicks have put together, this group and this roster, it's not necessarily a team that's going to be able to compete for the playoffs. And it was a tough year that they had last season as well. You got a first-year head coach. You have a couple pieces that you can work with, but I think for the most part, it's going to be a difficult season for the New York Knicks. You're going to see regression, not progression, and I really do believe that. Now, as far as the Brooklyn Nets, I think that there will be some progress. I'm not sure how much, but I think that this is a team that, remember, 2-3 years ago was at the bottom of the barrel in the NBA, worst team in the NBA, and then you get no reward by being the worst team because they weren't even getting drafted. Picks. I think what they've been able to do with Sean Marks, okay, and Kenny Atkinson, I think that they've put a good culture in place for this team. I think that they will compete. Making the playoffs is going to be very difficult. We've discussed this several times over the last month or so, what the expectations will be for the Brooklyn Nets. But I think this is a team that, despite these dismal records that they've put out the last couple of seasons, there have been some games that they've competed in. And I don't mean just against like some of the other poor teams in the NBA, even against some of the good teams. So I think that the expectations for the Nets should be a little bit more optimistic than it is across the river for the Knicks.
Well, we're going to see a lot from the Knicks in terms of this is going to be Coach David Fizdale's inaugural season as the New York Knicks head coach. And we're going to see how well he handles the bright lights of the big city because they're going to shine bright and the New York City media is harsh. They can be harsh. So, I mean, it's going to be a rebuilding. It's going to be they already know that they have a lot of young talent and they're really going to build their team through the draft, and so they're gonna see these young people develop and grow, and it's up to them to nurture that growth. And we're going to see what is going to become of Kevin Knox. You remember, he was booed mercilessly during the draft, a la Kristaps Porzingis. And we saw how Kristaps handled it and what he was able to do during his rookie season. So maybe, you know, maybe history will repeat itself and Kevin Knox can be the shining star on the New York Knicks. And then also with the Brooklyn Nets, you know, you hit it on the head. This is a team that's rebuilding and they're getting better each season. It's going to be incremental. We're not going to really talk playoffs because I just don't think that's realistic. But they're definitely in position to win more games this coming season than last. They have a lot of depth on the team, a lot of ball handlers, a lot of shooters, and Kenny Atkinson is really harping on defense. And it is believed that D'Angelo Russell will have a breakout season. Like, this will be the year for him.
Brooklyn hopes so.
Right. And Mike, it looks like Discord has a locker with the New York Giants. Is our team on the brink of falling apart? What is happening?
Well, I think Sunday was brutal. You know, completely brutal. They had an opportunity to come back in that game against the Carolina Panthers. They lost it. And it wouldn't be such a tough loss if they had actually won a game or two before that. But the fact that they're now 1-4 going into a Thursday night short week game against the Philadelphia Eagles, who were not doing so hot themselves. The Odell Beckham thing, and I'm not going to turn this into the let's bash Odell hour or half hour. What he did, I think, was wrong. He shouldn't have done it. I think that he should have went internally into the organization. I think that he threw his quarterback under the bus, his teammates under the bus, coaching staff under the bus, and, of course, the city of New York under the bus. But at the same time, I can sense how frustrated this guy is over the course of the first several games that they're playing, where they're not getting him the ball enough. The Giants have a lot of problems, and I'll say this. Their fan base right now, it's broken down into a dichotomy. Which I think the majority of Giant fans that have had it with Eli Manning, they think that the Giants made the mistake of keeping him, not going after a quarterback last year. Whether or not they feel that the Giants made the right decision, at this point, they've had it with Eli Manning. They think that the days are done. Now, there are people who are in the minority, and I would include myself in that minority, who think that it's not just the problem with Eli Manning. I still think that Eli Manning can win football games in the NFL. Now, it can be proven over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks that that's not the case. But I still believe in this guy, not just because he's won 2 Super Bowls, but because this franchise decided to back him this past offseason. It's going to be really difficult, though, as they go into these next 2 games, facing the Eagles at home and then a Monday night game in Atlanta against the Falcon team, who has the same record, I think, as the Giants. But that, you know, that the Atlanta Falcons are much better than what they've shown. So it's going to be tough if they don't start winning some games quickly. For a first-year coach with the Giants, Pat Shurmur, things are going to get very ugly very quickly.
Cavaliers power forward Tristan Thompson is in Cleveland, but guess who is not? His lady and baby mama, Khloe Kardashian. After initial reports of Khloe taking herself and baby True back to Cleveland, that has been put on hold until further notice. So we are going to stay tuned to see when and if Khloe joins Tristan in Cleveland. On that note, it's time for us to leave you, but don't worry, you can keep up with us until we meet again by following us on Instagram and Twitter, liking us on Facebook, and subscribing to our YouTube channel, all at 411 Sports TV.
Also, don't forget to download our podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Play Music, Spotify, and Stitcher.
I'm Keisha Wilson, and on behalf of Mike McDonald, we'd like to thank you for joining us at What's the 411 Sports, and we look forward to hanging with you again.